love and at concern, like a struggle not to smile or not to explode in a fit of temper. Nona had rarely seen those two feelings go to war before, but it only lasted a second. The camera waited on the other person, the other prince, as though waiting for them, for her, to say anything. She didn't. She was as stony and as cool and as uninterested as she had been before. Curiously, Nona noticed, she didn't even seem to be breathing. "Anyway, back to me, Prince Cianthe Nabarius," said Prince Cianthe Nabarius. The screen nauseously wobbled back and closed in. The crown prince, the dream girl, disappeared from view. They said, "I will broadcast again exactly 24 hours from now with new instructions. What those instructions are will depend very much on you. Hail to the Emperor Undying, to his nine houses, and also to you, his respected pactmates, beneficiaries, and allies." There was a pause. In quite a different voice, the person said, "That'll fix their little red wagons. Is this still on?" The screen flickered, and a disembodied voice said, "This broadcast will repeat at 5 o'clock tomorrow as a recording." Then it all went dead. The hexagons flared white, one sparked at the end of the frame. The sun had sunk a little lower behind the buildings, so when the broadcast stopped, it all seemed extraordinarily dark, like nighttime had come early. Nona clung to the pole with slippery hands, feeling all at sea. She focused in on Hot Sauce's breathing, which was very shallow and very soft, but there. Nona looked at the way Hot Sauce's nostrils flared, deep inside her hood, at the rise and fall of her chest. She wanted to make sure. The silence had broken. Some of the militia had taken over the loudspeakers, telling people to go. They repeated, "Disperse! Disperse!" But nobody seemed to want to disperse. The noise grew and grew and grew. Someone right under Nona's pole said, "This city's over! I'm going into the desert. We won't survive another one of these." Someone in the crowd was yelling. They were being pulled away by two other people. Nona saw their faces as the crowd pressed and the crowd parted. They were saying, "Liars! Liars! Ur is fighting! They're losing! Liars!" The megaphone was still bleating out, "Disperse! Disperse!" One of the militia trucks had turned on its alarm so that Nona couldn't hear individual voices anymore. It was a horrible sound, a long dying whine punctuated by a whirring woo-woo-woo noise like when the poison cats were fighting. She clung to Hot Sauce and the pole. Some people tried to throw things at the screen, but other people were pulling them away. The crowd's fear had changed and mixed them up. They were surging this way and that, forming rivers and currents, some people refusing to move, others struggling to get away. One of the militia trucks was slowly chugging into the crowd, people pushing to get out of its path, as someone on the back of it yelled and gesticulated, "Everyone on this side of me, go down the Broadway! Everyone on this side of me, back toward the motorway! Come on!" No shots had rung out, at least. There were scuffles among the people, but most sets of shoulders Nona saw seemed more depressed than anything. She looked at Hot Sauce and nervously joggled her elbow. Hot Sauce didn't seem inclined to move. She whispered, "What now?" Hot Sauce looked at Nona. Her pupils had gone small and dark. "They're not people, Nona," she said. "They're not people." Nona ventured, "They seemed strange." "Because they're not real," said Hot Sauce. Her lips were a little wet. She was terribly afraid all of a sudden, Nona could see, filled with the fear her body spent so much of its time rejecting. Nona thought about her tantrums and, buoyed by the courage that had brought her here, reached out to seize Hot Sauce's wrist that wasn't holding the pole. "Listen to me," she commanded. "I'm your teacher's aide. Breathe with me. I'll squeeze your hand for in and let go for out. In through the nose, Out through the mouth. Not so quickly. Don't hyperventilate, she added, knowing she sounded exactly like Camilla. Hot Sauce acquiesced. She took 5 breaths in, 5 breaths out. All the while the alarm blared horribly and the crowd surged and billowed beneath them. Her face still looked strange and rigid, as though she might puke. Nona realised that although Hot Sauce was still her leader, she had to help Hot Sauce. She had to be the one who was nearly 19. She started to caterpillar herself back down the pole. Her long career as the worm with problems had taught her the movements she needed to lower herself, and when her feet touched the bottom, jostled by people on her elbows and shoulders all the way, she called, "Come down! Let's go!" Hot Sauce came down. Nona held her hand as they joined the crowd. She had scanned over the top of people's heads and thought, a little desperately, that she knew where the crowd was thickest. She was very grateful in that moment that she knew about movements. She hurled herself and Hot Sauce into the current and dragged her toward where they had come from, changed her mind in a moment of stillness, joined a rivulet heading east, wriggling into their midst and saying loudly, "My sister's going to be sick," which got them a tiny opening, enough to move through. The crowd extended all the way up the back street. She could smell the smoke where the old water treatment plant was still smouldering. They had barely made it into the artery going up the street before a shot rang out in the crowd behind them. Everyone screamed and cringed, and then everyone ran. At the noise of the bullet, Hot Sauce seemed to come online again. She dragged Nona into a tiny alleyway, away from the stampede. She said, "Go!" And Nona was grateful to have her back, grateful to let her take the lead. They had to climb mounds of leaking garbage sacks, and Nona cut herself terribly on a jaggedy old can. She squealed at the pain, but stuck her hand in her pocket to hide it. The noise grew terrible. Alarms, yells, backfiring trucks. They scrambled up and down fences. The wires cut their hands. They skidded and fell down in broken and half-demolished buildings. It seemed like the sound was always right behind them, and they couldn't get away from it. "Nona!" called a voice. "Nona! Hot Sauce! Girls!" This voice came from a truck with a grill. This truck had mounted the pavement, and other cars were honking at it. It was the Angel, sitting in the passenger's seat. She had the window rolled down, and she was twisting herself into a knot to open the back door. She bawled, "Get in!" Hot Sauce and Nona didn't need asking twice. They threw themselves at the truck, scrambled up into the rough, potholed back seats and shut the door behind them, panting. Noodle was there, lying in the bit where your feet went, looking baleful at all the noise and interruptions. The Angel said to someone, "Drive!" They were separated from the passenger seat by a fine black mesh, but the Angel had peeled it back so that she could look at them. She said sharply, "Are you hurt?" "Nona got cut," said Hot Sauce, grimy and dirty and bloody herself. "No, I didn't," said Nona quickly. "I thought I did, but I didn't." "You're covered in blood." "I'm fine, I'm fine." The Angel, having ascertained that neither of the girls was bleeding out, said, "Buckle yourselves in. Both of you deserve to be bloody pancakes. Kevin was in hysterics." "How did you know where we were?" asked Nona, wrestling with the seatbelt. "I'm not stupid. I've been doing donuts around the school building for the last half hour waiting for you two to turn up." Nona was amazed that she and Hot Sauce had gotten as far as the school building, but also that they had not gone further. It seemed as though they had been running for ages. Hot Sauce said, "Where are the others?" And the Angel said, "Safe. The moment I knew you two had scarpered, I decided to pull everyone back in case they got the same idea. Go left," she said to the unseen driver. "For God's sake, don't use the motorway. Everyone's driving like maniacs. Don't take anything that feeds onto the Civic, and don't rear-end anyone."
"Who is driving this fucking car?" said the driver.
They had a low, terse voice and surprisingly good house.
"You, so make sure we have a car to drive by the end of the journey," said the Angel.
She turned back to the girls.
She had fixed her face into steely, teacherly disapproval, and Nona writhed beneath it. She said, "Hot sauce? I'm driving you to the shelter."
"Nice shelter. I'll bunk with Honesty," said Hot Sauce distantly.
"As if. I dropped off Honesty myself. You know where Honesty lives, and you'd be going back in the wrong direction, inside that mess."
"Nice shelter. They're autocrats," said Hot Sauce.
"Okay. You can sleep in a place I know. It's mine, but I'm not going to be using it." The driver said,
"You're not?"
"If I don't go home with you, you're going to crouch outside my door all night."
"Don't make it sound like it's my hide here," said the driver.
Hot Sauce subsided into silence. Nona watched her face flatten, which meant that she had no argument to make. The angel turned her sights on Nona instead and said briskly, "Nona, where do you live?" Nona told them. The driver tried to crane their neck around to look at her, but it was simply impossible. There was too much grill and they were wearing a thick desert muffler round their head. The angel, who could crane, had craned immediately. She said, bewildered,
"I thought Jolie was funning me. The building? Inside of it, you mean?"
"Yes," said Nona, who was about to elaborate on exactly where, but remembered Palamides and Camilla's warnings, and shut herself up in time. She said,
"I do live there, really, truly."
The angel righted herself in her seat. She said, "We'll go there first, then."
"Thank you," said Nona meekly.
Now that the adrenaline had passed, all the fight had left her. She just felt frightened and shivery. When the angel said,
"Hot Sauce, how badly is she hurt?
Nona, have you had your stone mouth jab?"
She couldn't think of anything smarter to do than tuck her hands inside her jacket and say, "I'm fine, not hurt at all."
"Horseshit," said the angel. "You're all over blood. There's a first aid kit beneath your seat. Hot Sauce?"
"Really, I'm not. It can't be my blood. It must be someone else's. Maybe it's tomato sauce. Who knows? It could be anything, but please don't worry about it."
Not, as Pyrrha would have said, her best effort. But maybe the rising pitch of hysteria in her voice convinced the angel, because she only said, "I'll check you out tomorrow. If you start to feel faint or get a fever, let someone know, all right?"
"I will, I will, I promise."
The person in the driver's seat muttered,
"I can't believe this."
"Yes," said the angel. "Were those your dulcet tones making commentary?"
"If people knew this was how you spent your time, Aim."
"They should hope to God they spent their own time half so usefully," said the angel wrathfully.
"Pretending you can bandage bipeds, teaching snot-nosed kids about particles."
"None of us have snot," said Nona, deeply offended. Then she thought about it and said more truthfully,
"Anyway, it's not Kevin's fault."
The driver didn't say anything.
Hot Sauce spoke up. "We love her."
The driver said to the angel and not Hot Sauce,
"Now I see. Chance to be her, huh? A little independent living for once."
"It is my enormous privilege to be they. Just drive," said the angel crisply. "I don't pay you for your opinions."
"You don't pay me anything," said the driver. "I'm here for my bloody sins."
The drive would have been extremely exciting had Nona's car sickness not warred with her homesickness. Around 26 highly unusual bad things had happened to her today, and she had assumed she only had room for 6 unusual bad things before she had a tantrum. It must mean she was growing up. The driver gunned the ignition and drove in all the places cars weren't meant to drive. Thankfully, a lot of other cars were doing that too. Many times there was a huge bump as the car went onto the pavement, or had to swerve suddenly, or rattled down along a little road that didn't have the type of terrain meant for a car. Most terrifyingly, the car once drove down a whole road that had been closed to cars due to the crevasses and potholes, right through a plastic snapper that had an illustration of a car falling down a huge hole, and Nona couldn't help uttering tiny shrieks every time they drove close to those huge, black, lightless wells. Noodle uttered tiny "ow, ow, ow" sounds with her, as though in sympathy, even when the angel said without any particular heat, "Shut up, dog, we've been through worse." Nona felt embarrassed that greater courage was expected of the dog than of her. Hot Sauce settled back in the car seat, and Nona noticed with absolute disbelief that she had fallen asleep. Nona closed her eyes and put her feet close to Noodle. And then it was suddenly their road. The building loomed high above the car window, and tears smarted in Nona's eyes to be finally home after such a long and hideous day. They had to wait until the gate opened before pulling into the deep garage. Nona didn't even question why the truck that the angel was being driven in was allowed access to the gate. Maybe whoever was manning the gate saw the grill and thought better of stopping them. The lights had all been turned off in the underbuilding where the other cars and trucks and motorcycles went, and it was astonishingly dark, all except for the truck's big headlights. There were people next to idling trucks, next to cars, people with their dust hoods up, people with their guns out, or people standing and talking quietly. When they saw the truck, they turned their heads, then immediately looked away again. The driver turned off the lights. It was now so dark inside the car that Nona could barely see herself. And the angel said, "Will you be all right from here?"
"Yes," said Nona. "Yes, I think so."
"School will be in session tomorrow," said the angel. The driver said,
"No, it won't."
And the angel said, "Yes, it will. Can I depend on you, Nona? Am I going to be in trouble?"
"Least said," said the angel, "soonest mended."
Even in the dark, Nona could see her teeth, her tired smile, the soft set of her shoulders. She reached out a very calloused hand and patted Nona on the head, just as though she were Noodle. And Nona felt better. She knew from that touch that she wasn't really in trouble.
Hot Sauce spoke up suddenly in the darkness and said, "It was my idea."
"Yes, I was aware," said the angel wearily. "Tomorrow, Nona, it'll be safe at the school." Nona pushed hard on the big truck door and slithered out of the vehicle. Outside the truck, it was a little easier to see. There were lights from people's cigarettes, lights from the reflective sprays on the backs of the trucks, lights from the landing.
She said, "Thanks. I love you."
And then darted away into the elevator well as fast as she could, feeling red hot with embarrassment.
She hadn't meant to say it.
It was like the time Born in the Morning had called the angel Dad, only she did mean it. She did love the angel after today. Nona took the stairwell up because the elevator stuck so much. Her legs were wobbly and tired, and she had to wait on the landing every time her calves and her feet got too stiff. Thankfully, that sensation never lasted long. It was like a brief twinge, and she was able to keep climbing, up all 33 flights, though after the 32nd she gave up and went on her hands and knees. By the time she was on her own dear, scrubby-carpeted 33rd floor with the cop below and the militia guys above and the adjacent crying baby, which was not making itself known, she nearly kissed the floor. Only she thought that Palamedes would say that was the easiest way to bring on a serious virus. The last few metres were the longest, fumbling around beneath the mat for where they had glued the spare key, and thumbing the right number into the numlock pad took all she had left. She turned the knob and flung the door open and wailed in a big, excited hurry,
"I'm home! I'm safe! You don't have to worry!"
Camilla rose from the table, empty water glasses stacked neatly before her, a whole page of newspaper torn into beautifully even strips, exactly as if a bird had done it. The work of hours, the labour of anxiety. Nona flew to her. Cam caught her up by the arms and looked through her, not at her. Her beautiful pale grey eyes looked like holes burnt in a mask. Then she held Nona so hard that it very literally hurt. Nona's face was squashed into the hard bits of her chest.
"Come, I'm fine," she said again, flattened and breathless. "I'm okay. Where's Pyrrha?"
Camilla's arms went slack so Nona could pull back a little way. She looked up at the door, as though she expected to see something there, and had just realised she hadn't. She looked down at Nona. When she looked at Nona again, her face was horrible.
"Nona," she said.
"Pyrrha went to pick you up from school before lunch. I thought she was with you."
John 19:18. In the dream, the waters kept rising. They started making a hut at the top of the hill. Bodies were bobbing up and down in the water. He was scared of that. He was always scared of the water. And he made the waters go away for a while. And he raised up some parts of the earth that had been covered by sea. She watched them explode upward, shedding tons of water back into the soup. She asked him if it was hard. He said the hardest thing was remembering that he could do it, and not just doing things the old, difficult way. On the new plank of land, all cut up from the water and the damage, there was a broken concrete building guarded by enormous shards of cracked bone, like an egg that had been smashed from above. They wandered through the fields, slipping in icy brown mud, but they didn't go anywhere near the building. They found the hood of a half-dead car to sit on, which was drying in the light, and he said,
"Politically, we were a landmine. Everybody was trying to get to grips with the timescale. We didn't have much time left, and new data fucked around with the numbers every day. Every time you breathed funny, we wet ourselves. But the old backers, they were the most scared of us. Kept saying we were working with this country or that country, pushed the hardest to prove that what we were doing wasn't real, and that anybody talking to us was helping us pull the world's leg. They were all going round and round and round. I kept saying, 'Give me a seat at the table. Let's work out if I can help, if I can do something.' He said, 'Turns out you can't even talk about whether or not you can work out how to do something without 12 weeks of diplomatic dialogue. It was sick.' He said, 'Anyway, we all had Interpol warrants. Some of the guys inside our walls who'd joined us were like, "We want out." Sometimes they wanted out because they were CIA plants and they had bosses to go back to. Sometimes they wanted out because they were scared. Anyone who wanted to go, I let them go. I didn't even care about those guys. Like, nice of them to show up, but they were small fry. I could only trust the inner circle. My scientists, my engineer, my detective, my lawyer, my artist, my nun, my hedge fund manager. My diehards. The ones keeping the lights on. And Ulysses and Titania, my two dead kids. But they were dead. They were great conversation. I wanted to figure out if I could bring them back. If I could really do it, if I could make them come back to life." He said, "Problem was, I couldn't bring anyone back once they'd gone. Just stop them from going if they were close. I could fix all the damage and even get the heart beating again and fix the brain. But there was nothing going on inside Ulysses and Titania. They never talked. They never responded. I'd get really scared now and again and turn off the hearts and the brains. I didn't know what I was doing. And that ate at me." He said, "Our nun kept saying, 'Of course you can't bring them back. Their souls are gone.' It took me way too long to listen to her, but I was a perfectionist, right? I didn't want to believe that there was a thing like a soul. I wanted to believe I hadn't got it right." He said, "Both of us were correct, but that's for later. What happened then was we found out where the money had gone." At this point in the dream, he stood up and walked 3 times around the field.
he said.
Don't follow me. I'm mad.
She sat on the car roof and watched as he kicked a piece of detritus over the edge of the big muddy field. He had sent it quite high, so it fell into the rising mist and then rattled a long way down the hill until she didn't hear it any more. She wondered again why anything that hurt them only hurt briefly, but that anger took such a long time to go away. When he had got over it, he rejoined her on the bonnet of the car, and he tucked his knees up and the metal beneath them groaned at their weight, and he began again. He said,
"They took the ships, our ones, the new ones. They said they were going to use FTL instead, faster than light travel. Stupid name for it. It was never really about light speed, but anyway. They said carrying everyone over so slowly was a risk, that they'd shut the cryo plan down because it wasn't good enough. It wasn't safe, it wasn't okay or moral. They said we'd only managed to get it down to an 8% chance of lasting damage once we thawed them, and we'd never fix maternity."
Here he broke off and couldn't speak for a while. When he spoke again, he said,
"We were the ones who argued them down to 8%. They were ready to go when we were just in the 70s. They were all, 'Ooh, everyone knows it's a risk, and it's not like it's 30% fatality. It's 30% chance of damage. What's that even? Ooh.'"
He said,
"They hadn't given a fuck about maternity. Said people should terminate before they got packed, as a rule. When M had been all, 'I will not accept those numbers. I will not accept a plan that incorporates reproductive injustice.' And we stood beside her. We said, 'That's not acceptable.' They whinged about the money for a while and eventually said, 'Fine.' And now they were acting like 8% wasn't good enough. Like we hadn't tried."
He said,
"Their plan was to evac the whole population. First, send out a dozen guide ships. They said they'd managed to find some poor dipshit geek who'd fixed the FTL problem of getting locked in the chrono well. You know, moving so fast you were stuck doing quantum wheelies. They'd come up with something where you could oscillate out so long as the ship was attuned to a prearranged spectrum outside. I still don't understand the maths. It's going to take me 10,000 years to understand it. I couldn't follow, but A could. He said immediately, 'What is the point if you still have no fucking clue where your ship is going to end up when you shake out of FTL? They said, "Aha, but we can track it once it's out." A said, "It could be halfway across the universe or phasing through a planet." They kept arguing that probably wouldn't happen and that A wasn't following, and he had to admit that it wasn't his area, but he said they were taking one discovery and acting like it changed the whole ball game, when really we now needed 10 years of funding to discover whether it was any use, i.e. academia functioning as normal. But these trillionaires were acting like they'd got the Holy Grail. They said it was expensive, so 12 ships would go first, with one guiding them out with the beacon frequencies like a tugboat leading a cruise liner, triangulate for Tau Ceti, dump the population and come back. They said that they were on track to finish a lot more FTL-capable ships by then.
He said,
"We knew how much those ships cost. We couldn't even imagine how much FTL engines cost, but we could guess. We knew how much each ship could carry. In the cryocans, we could cram in billions. That was cryo's saving grace. Whereas they were staffing ships with a living crew, no sleepers, big-ass ships with thousands of live staff. When we pointed that out, they kept saying we were crazy, we were kooks, we were monsters. They kept saying cows watched sunsets. At that point, I wished I'd used the fucking conspiracy theorists instead of the cows. Nobody would have cared if I'd turned people inside out who think vaccines have nanites in them that mine cryptocurrency. But cows watch sunsets, man!" He said, M freaked out, said this was the rats scattering, said this was why they'd dumped the cryo plan in the first place. She said we were looking at a private flotilla carrying the rich bastards to safety, and A agreed with her, which was how you knew it was really, really bad. He said this was a blind. He said he wasn't even sure the FTL thing was real. He said they were going to try to generation ship it to Tau Ceti using stuff we'd come up with, tech we'd created, and just be all, bye-bye, fuck you, planet, thanks for the oil and for the chicken yakitori, we loved that stuff. And I said again, guys, nobody's going to fall for that. They're going to have to give numbers. They're going to have to prove they're making the other ships. Nobody's going to fall for that. Look at all the division we caused because we proved magic was real and turned biddy-biddy inside out because we didn't trust the cops. It's not going to fly. I said, they can't do this now. They can't pull this off.
At that moment in the dream, he got up off the car and he said, fuck, in a normal voice. And then he said, fuck, so loudly that it echoed off the crumbling concrete shell in the bones and was carried off into the mist. She watched him walk the field 3 times, 5 times, 10. On the 11th, he squelched through the mud to her and collapsed in front of the car, and he said,
they left you. They left you. They saw you suffering on dollar shop life support, and they didn't look back. They didn't give a fuck about trying to save you. They left.
She said, I don't remember. He said,
I can't forget.
Day 4.
Where is Pyrrha? The gang swears an oath. The angel makes a call. Hot Sauce draws her gun. 48 hours until the tomb opens. 17. Nona woke up, cold and alone, with very little idea of how she had fallen asleep. She was still wearing all her clothes, and she hadn't had her bath. In the night, someone had unbuttoned her dust coat, taken off her shoes, and loosened what she was wearing, which meant Camilla or Palamedes. Only they would have thought of it. Last night had been dreadful, too bewildering even to thank her lucky stars that Camilla hadn't once asked about the broadcast. Once she'd heard that Nona had waited at school when Pyrrha hadn't turned up, then been driven home by a teacher, that was that. She didn't ask anything else except, you heard about the broadcast? And Nona said faintly,
yes,
ready to tell her about the girl from the dream. But Camilla had immediately changed tack, immediately gone to ask Palamedes what to do. Nona, who by this point was perishing with hunger and exhaustion, had been placed on the floor by Palamedes and forced to suck on cubes of frozen fruit juice as he furiously scribbled on a sheet of paper. He only paused once to say,
you know what the 9 houses have said, of course.
Buoyed by blood sugar, Nona was ready to confess.
Yes, more than. Honesty came in and told us everything they said over the radio, and then Hot Sauce wanted to see it and...
She paused, but Palamedes didn't take the bait.
Pyrrha was gone before we knew anything about it. She must have set off a full hour before any call came. Nona, did Crown say anything to you about the broadcast when she walked you to the classroom? Did she seem to know about it?
Nona puzzled over the memory.
No, she didn't say a word. We only found out after lunch, and I stayed because Camilla didn't come to pick me up. Crown didn't say anything.
This wasn't quite true, and Nona was feeling in the mood to explain, so she tucked the ice cube in her cheek and said,
only Crown did tell the angel that she was dating Camilla, and I didn't say, no, she isn't, so I'm sorry.
Palamedes was not so tired that he could not look amused, which was always funny on Camilla's dark, serious face.
On Crown's Head be it. Don't worry, Nona. Keep at that cube and take another when you're done. You're almost unconscious.
Then he said more to himself than to her.
Pyrrha, why the hell did you go off half-cocked? What was so fucking urgent that you couldn't even pick up Nona?
That's two swears, said Nona,
so nearly asleep she was in danger of choking on the ice cube.
Not a teacher's aid right now, Nona, said Palamedes.
She said, maybe someone told her about the broadcast on her way to get me. Maybe she went to see the shuttle land.
Palamedes said, neither of those things would prevent her from getting you. And then he stopped, completely dead.
He said, the shuttle. That fucking shuttle.
Three, said Nona, forgetting.
Oh, God, said Palamedes. Pyrrha Dvay, please. Nona, your ice cube's falling out.
The last thing she remembered was the ice cube falling out for real, and finally, nothing after. Now the alarm was ringing shrilly, far too close for her to stop it with one arm and fall back asleep. Camilla must have set it to make such a horrible sound at some point yesterday. Nona hunted around and pushed its buttons until the noise stopped. She was completely alone in the bedroom. She panicked for a moment, until she saw Camilla and Palamedes' clothes hung up like normal. But neither of them was there. No Cam with her clipboard, no nothing. It was the first morning that Nona could remember when she hadn't been woken up to tell her dreams. She heard the running of the tap in the room next door, and that comforted her. All the sounds of someone doing the washing up. Except it wasn't Pyrrha, which made her feel bereft. She did not know what to do without someone to give her the cue that it was okay to dress, and in any case, she was dressed already. For a moment she lay there, helpless, until the noise of the dishes being wiped stopped, and Cam was there in the doorway with one of the blue and white striped cloths that Pyrrha used to dry things with. "Push the red button and tell the recorder anything you remember," she said. "I'm making breakfast. Press the 1 second from left when you're done." Then she disappeared again. Nona didn't like this at all. Last night's dream was already mixed up with Pyrrha being gone and the girl on the broadcast, so that she now doubted whether or not the girl on the broadcast had had the face of the girl in the dream, or if it was all part of some long nightmare. For a moment she thought about hunting out the picture to confirm, but Cam had told her to record herself, and she'd already forgotten which button to push. Her face burned with embarrassment, so she pushed buttons at random, and the recording within made awful sounds. She turned the volume down low so that Camilla couldn't hear her screwing up. There was static, and then she heard Camilla's voice coming out of the speakers, sounding tired.
"Want her to be Harrow Hark, Warden."
Another plastic echo of buttons. The same voice answered, but not the same person. The conversation that followed was filled with weird pauses, as though they were actors in a play who couldn't quite get their cues right.
"Yes, but the question we need to ask is why? They hate zombie wizards so much more than zombie thralls. To wit, Judith Deuteros. Why do they want a lictor on tap?"
Another pause, another clack.
"To remove the RB?"
Pause, clack.
"Not sure. Get the feeling that the RB is more a crimp in their plans than the plan itself. At first, I thought they were keeping Deuteros alive to see if they could make a lictor out of her instead, but I'm not so sure. I think I buy Corona's story that she's the getaway vehicle. Put crudely. But it's Harrow Hark they want. Or at least, it's Harrow that we suffer wants. I don't think Mervwing and the Hopers want Harrow at all. Or at least, they're not holding out for her. Everything comes back to the tomb, Cam. God, I wish I could see your face."
Clack. Pause.
"Look in the mirror."
Pause.
"It's not you. It's me wearing you. I keep turning around to find you and there's nobody there."
Clack.
I know the feeling. Pause. Of course you know. Of course I'm telling you what you already intimately know. I have spent 3/4 of my life telling you what you already knew, and 1/6 telling you what you didn't. And now, here I am, installed in your body mere minutes from chewing up your soul. Camilla, I can't bear this. I'm eating your life. Clack. Pause. I'd carry you with me either way. Pause. What do you mean? Pause. Clack. I've carried you, Warden, and I've carried your memory. I'd rather carry you. Clack. What about carrying nothing? What about Camilla Hecht, the independent entity, free to live her life outside the shadow of her necromancer, free from his agenda dictating hers? Pause. You thought it was your agenda? Huh. Clack. I cannot bear the thought of using you. Pause. Love and freedom don't coexist, Warden. Clack. This is all there is to love. Simply by being in your life, I have added indelibly to its weight. Pause. Yes. Clack. Camilla, I mean it. Pause. I meant it too. You used to say it to me. We are one flesh. Clack. I am your end. Pause. That didn't mean I got squatting rights in your soul. I never would have asked for that. I never had rights to that. Clack. Sure. That's why I gave them to you. Clack. Pause. 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 I hope you know that I adore you, scholar. Clack. Indubitably, Warden. Pause. Come. Have you thought about what it means if known as, actually, a completed merger? One we will never actually be able to unpick. A successful soul gestalt. Clack. Yes. Yes. And? Thoughts? Clack. Lucky them. Another pause. And in the same tones. More seriously. Keep neutral. Pause. Yes. Agreed. Roger that. Clack. Pause. Pause. One of them said, Nona couldn't tell which, about the captain and Corona. But then, with a loud static squeal and a garble, the recording swapped over into Nona's own voice saying, Water mouth, water salt mouth, and Camilla's saying, In the dream there's salt water in their mouth. Mm-hmm. In your mouth. Mm-hmm. Yes, when I've got it right. No, when I don't. The salt water's in your mouth. Yes. Do you remember anything else? After another moment. Face? Nona, are you pointing at your face? Nona looked up. Camilla was standing in the doorway. The front of her cheeks and forehead went hot, and she knew that she was blushing furiously. But Camilla's expression was very even. The recorder made another loud static squeak and a garble, and Nona pushed wildly at a button until it stopped. Silence filled the room like cold water. How old was I then? She blurted, more out of something to say than anything else. 2 months. Then, go wash up. Breakfast's nearly done. 2 months, Nona thought distantly. Back when she was a baby who couldn't do anything and could barely talk. It seemed so long ago. She wanted to say, Cam, I didn't hear anything, even though she patently had. But Camilla had already disappeared. In another pother of despair, she twiddled the player to try to get a local radio station, hoping vaguely that there'd be another broadcast or maybe music. Pyrrha could make it go to stations where they still played music. She was teaching Nona how to dance. Who was Pyrrha going to tell ass jokes to? Nona didn't know. All of a sudden she felt sad and responsible that nobody was there to listen to Pyrrha's ass jokes.
In this saintly, uplifted, and really quite terrified state of mind, Nona looked at herself and found that she was very grimy. In a welter of fearful bravery, she sponged herself at the cold water tap until she was free of smuts and old blood and dust, and the water was so cold it made her skin purple and blotchy. She called out,
"Camilla, can I borrow a shirt?"
and was pleased to hear,
"Sure."
So she picked out one that was only a little too big but smelled comfortingly of Camilla. She looked in the cracked mirror and decided her hair was probably all right. The braids were a bit fuzzy, but still doable. Thus armed, she went into the kitchen to see about breakfast.
"Sit," said Camilla.
Nona sat down in front of a whole glass of water and a pottle of curds, with the top taken off and a spoon stuck inside. The heat was already getting bad. The tiny, whirring fridge sounded like it was on its last legs. Nona, wanting very much to be good, drank all the water and ate half the pottle, fueled by martyred smugness that she was behaving so well. By the time she'd eaten half, though, she felt ill and set down the spoon and said, "Done," and was a little horrified that Camilla only gave the pottle a cursory glance before saying,
"Okay."
She wanted to say, "Camilla, I'm really sorry I listened to your secret private tape." But Cam was sitting in front of her and mechanically scooping the contents of two pottles at once into her mouth. That did not seem like the action of someone who hated Nona forever, even if there was something strangely awkward in the set of her shoulders and her hands. "Cam," she said, plucking up what was left of her courage, "are we going to wait at home for Pyrrha?"
"No," said Camilla. "She's been gone for nearly 24 hours. I've been stuck here the whole time. I need to see the broadcast. I need to know where Pyrrha is. We're going looking."
"Oh, to her work? At the building site?"
Nona cheered up a little.
"Do you think she got caught up in everything and slept on someone's couch?"
But Camilla squashed this.
"No. The warden says the timeline's wrong. Pyrrha went walkabout before 1 o'clock when she was due to pick you up. Either she met with an accident or she went somewhere deliberately. If she went somewhere deliberately, she had to make the choice then and there."
"How do you know?"
"Her guns are still here."
Even Nona could tell that meant Pyrrha had not intended to go anywhere very far. Pyrrha loved her guns. Then Cam dropped the bomb.
"We're going to the spaceport."
Nona was staggered. "Cam, the spaceport is a mess. Everyone says so. You say never go near there. We're going to get shot maybe 20 times.
Camilla emptied the last pottle into her mouth.
"Yes," she said. "And you're coming too."
"Really? Really? But I never get to go. Thank you. I won't get shot anywhere strange."
Then she said,
"Oh, but Cam, can't we please, please go by my school first? I said I'd go. Hot Sauce and the others are really the only ones left."
When she saw Camilla's expression, she pleaded,
"I haven't made sure the angel, my teacher, is safe, you know, after driving me home last night. She saved my life. I can't go anywhere without checking in, really, truly."
She did not expect Camilla to hesitate. She expected no. But Camilla said,
"Fine. The warden wanted to thank her. But Nona..."
Nona waited. "After this," Camilla said, "probably no more school. Probably no seeing your friends. You know that, right?" She was glum, but she had been expecting it.
"I do. I do know that."
She couldn't help but say,
"I've loved them, though."
"We know," said Camilla.
After that, Camilla went to dress and clean up in the next room. Nona, having discharged quite a lot of goodness, was drawn to do something that she never would have been allowed to do normally. She went to the window, peeled up the sniper blazing as quietly as possible, and stared directly up at the big blue sphere hanging in the sky. She so rarely got to look at it from here. It hung on the morning horizon, and as she watched, The sphere made a low, voiceless moan, a wanting sound, but quiet, on the edge of hearing, a whispered vocalization and nothing more.
"Can you help me?" Nona whispered. "Can you do anything? Do you know where Pyrrha is?"
But it only lowed sadly, like a cow.
"That's all right," whispered Nona. "Sorry for asking."
Then,
"Don't do anything weird, okay? I'm having enough trouble right now."
The sniper blazing was pressed back down just in time for Camilla to come back to help as Nona wriggled into her sand jacket and sleeves and her hat and her mask and did up her shoes. Camilla put on the dark glasses, and then they went out into the building as though it was a normal morning. The building was a hive of activity, as though it hadn't slept. There were voices behind doors, sounds of people moving heavy boxes. No baby crying, only talking, low and urgent. For some reason, Camilla even took the elevator this time. When Nona asked why, Camilla said, "Conserve your energy, you're tired." The elevator behaved all the way down to the ground floor, as if it was cowed too. On the ground floor, there were lots of people there, forming a human chain at some storage cupboard or something, passing sealed security boxes from person to make a big stack of them outside the door. There was another person carefully securing them in the back of an idling truck. Nobody paid Camilla or Nona the slightest bit of attention. It was a long and lonely walk to school without Pyrrha, despite the press of all the people. There was something electric in the air, as though the city were tensed and waiting for a loud noise, like watching a dog play with a rubber balloon and dreading the pop. There was a big militia presence on the street. They were all wearing the same gear she'd seen yesterday, full armour, full face shields. They went in rigid twos and threes, never alone, and never walking when they could be on motorbikes. She heard one of them say in a raised voice to someone, "I'm just doing my job. I'm just doing my job." Camilla gave them a wide berth. Nona felt sorry for the city. It wasn't its fault. It was as tall and tumble-down and snaggle-toothed as always. They took the long way around, avoiding arguments, immediately beelining away from raised voices and certain sets of the shoulders until, by the time they reached the school, the sun was basically risen. When Nona cupped her hands over the glass and looked into the foyer, she saw movement. Nona buzzed the door, and it unlocked to Honesty, who was waiting there with Kevin and beautiful Ruby. She was delighted and clapped her hands. "You're here! You're really here! I thought you wouldn't come," she said ecstatically. She threw her arms around Honesty's shoulders. "You said you wouldn't come anymore, Honesty. You said you were going to get a job."
"I need to get fed, don't I? I'm a growing man," said Honesty,
who had gone red, staring at Camilla, who loitered in the foyer a little way away from them.
"Get out of it, Nona! Stop being in love with me!"
But she was already hugging beautiful Ruby, who coped better with it, saying,
"Nona, you crim! Did you really sneak off to the..."
And for his pains, was jabbed in the ribs by Honesty and Nona, so he said at the top of his voice,
"Toilet!"
And they all dissolved together into a huddle of whispers, with Kevin right at the bottom.
"She doesn't know, don't tell her," hissed Nona.
"Phew, lad, good save there," said Honesty. "Don't be sarcastic at me," hissed Ruby. "It's not my fault. I just wanted to know how Nona was. You know they could have still been getting her off the road with the spatula. I walked past that road and they're cremating people, like right there. I saw somebody's arm."
"Ew," said Kevin.
"I didn't get to see anything,"
Nona whispered. Kevin was right there, and she wanted to hug him, but it was impossible in the huddle. So she reached down, and he placidly took her hand, while the other worked the zipper of his jacket up and down. His hand was exactly as sticky as she had suspected. Nona said,
"Hot Sauce and I left. We didn't get squashed."
"Why didn't Hot Sauce take me?" hissed Honesty, still injured. "I'm her lieutenant, and you get out of puff if you walk down the stairs."
But beautiful Ruby was saying more urgently,
The angel drove us home. The angel was madder than hell when Noodle came upstairs with that note. That was badass. I thought you'd catch it. Where's the boss?
Slept over with the angel, I think.
Both boys exclaimed, not caring of the noise now. Camilla, leaning against a leprous pillar, didn't react. It was horribly easy to forget Camilla was there when she didn't want you to remember. Nona said eagerly,
"The angel said she wasn't to sleep by herself, and she dropped us both off in the truck. She had a driver and everything."
Hearing that, they groaned in envy.
"She's probably got her own screens," said Honesty. "I bet she lives in one of those outer neighbourhoods with a gate," said Beautiful Ruby. "Not fair. Your people should have given you a massive hiding."
"She wouldn't get a massive hiding. She's nearly a grown-up," said Honesty.
But Beautiful Ruby said,
"She's a titch, though, so maybe they forgot. That pimp of hers scares me shitless."
Nona gave an outraged look over Ruby's head, but Camilla was staring out through cracks in a boarded-up window over on the other side of the reception area, which was a long way away. She dithered terribly and then said,
"You can't tell anyone, but my Pyrrha hasn't come home since yesterday. You can't tell anyone."
Beautiful Ruby said instantly and kindly,
"Won't tell. Don't worry, Nona. Pimping is long hours, and you have to go all over."
And she turned on him, and something in her eyes and face made him stop immediately and say,
"It was a joke. It was a joke. Oh, my God, don't be crazy at me. Stop it."
"We're going to go look," she whispered once she had calmed down. "Me and Camilla."
"Was it the broadcast?" asked Honesty shrewdly. "Any chance?"
And he made a horrible motion, strangling himself with his tongue out and his eyes floating all the way back into his skull.
"I don't think so," said Nona, trying to regain her composure and stop her tantrum in its tracks.
It had been a very near thing. She was feeling fragile, as Pyrrha said, after long nights.
"Pyrrha's very smart and wouldn't have got hurt."
Beautiful Ruby said, injured,
"How come it's cool to ask if your people got hurt or killed, but not okay to say one's a pimp?"
And Honesty said,
"He's tacked, little man. He's tacked." "How's that tacked? Seriously, how is that tacked? Someone explain."
Nona's eyes were smarting, and she changed the subject hastily.
"Where's Born in the Morning?"
They fell silent, which told Nona all she needed to know. Honesty said breezily,
"Those fucking dads of his probably already joined up,"
and laughed like it was a joke. But his absence was depressing, and they all felt it. It seemed strange that they were all there, even Kevin, even Honesty, but Born in the Morning wasn't. It felt as though they weren't all together. They weren't a gang. They subsided into silence until the door buzzed again. Nona saw Camilla flinch over on the other side of the room, and Honesty darted forward. But it was the angel, and it was Noodle, and it was Hot Sauce.
"This must be the first time you're on time, Honesty," the angel said.
Then she saw Camilla, and after a moment's hesitation, she reached out one firm little hand for Cam to shake, saying in the way adults spoke to each other,
"Manic, isn't it?"
"War zone," said Camilla, and "I wanted to thank you."
The angel firmly headed that off at the pass.
"Nonsense. I did absolutely nothing but give a colleague a lift. Unusual circumstances last night. Come upstairs, and we can talk after I've settled the kids, which is really the last and only thing I can do. I don't think we'll be able to keep this up much longer. The other teacher's already left me a message to say that she thinks school shouldn't resume until everyone's off the streets, so, you know, who knows when school will ever resume.
Come upstairs, come on, everyone," she said, before Cam could disagree, and as they went up the stairs she said,
"I met your partner yesterday,"
which had the power of stupefying Cam into silence. All of them trooped upstairs to the cloakroom and put their things away as per normal, and went into the dark, quiet classroom as one.
The angel turned on the lights and they sat at their proper clusters of desks, spread out across the classroom, because the nice lady teacher always said no way she was letting them all sit together, with Nona at the teacher's aide desk at the back. Nona was surprised when Camilla, automatic and meek, took an unused desk at the back herself, one of the bigger desks that the older girls sat at. She still had her knees folded up a little too much. Noodle made a beeline for the bed he always sat in beneath the whiteboard, and once he had settled himself, the angel said, "Is everyone all right? Are everyone's families all right?" There was a faint chorus of assent, but then beautiful Ruby burst out,
"Sweetie said maybe now the zombies are back you won't get knifed in the street, so we should do whatever they say."
The angel lifted both eyebrows. "Since when have you called your mum by her first name?" Beautiful Ruby coloured a bit.
"I'm not going to call her mum anymore. She's going over to their side."
"She's weak," said Hot Sauce, speaking for the first time. The angel looked at Hot Sauce searchingly. Something new was happening between them, Nona decided. They were different from how they had been just before last night. It wasn't as easy now as Hot Sauce being their leader and the angel's protector. Maybe Hot Sauce had gotten into trouble. But the angel didn't seem mad. She was only looking at her more carefully, with more interest. She said, "Well, it's a gift to be strong, and when you have to be strong for more people than yourself, it gets very complicated. I don't know how to explain or make it sound good," she added apologetically. "I don't want to read you the riot act. Don't care about what people say. Care about what people do. People say all kinds of things because it's so easy to open your mouth and make words come out. It's the doing that shows you what they are and what they feel." Hot Sauce challenged.
"So if someone says, 'I'm a necromancer,' we should wait around to see what they do next."
Nona dared a glance at Camilla. She was in a posture of perfect stillness, face a mask behind dark glasses, but listening as hard as she possibly could, which made Nona doubt it was Camilla. She sat as though she had been bolted to the floor. The others were absorbed by this verbal cut and thrust between their leader and the angel, leaning forward to hear what the angel would say. The angel said, "What, right now? Of course not. Start running in the opposite direction. No, don't fight them, Hot Sauce," she said, as Hot Sauce opened her mouth. "If you valorize paranoia so much, don't be a hypocrite about it, all right? If you're scared of necromancers, run from them. If they really are a necromancer, there's no point in fighting them, is there? It's like big animals. You can't actually exert your will on them. If you think you can, you're in danger. I learnt that back at my first job." Honesty said,
"Are you scared of necromancers?"
"Terribly. I was born on Lemuria, you see," said the angel. Honesty gave a long, slow whistle. Beautiful Ruby looked at his feet. Hot Sauce relaxed minutely. But Camilla said, "What happened on Lemuria?" The angel glanced across at Kevin, who had his knees tucked up to his chest and had wedged himself tightly into the desk. He had one of his erasers with the face on it out and was stroking it against the desk so that it left waxy streaks. She said, "The usual. It had been under contract for a long time. I mean, we were the third settlement wave. They built the crescent in the bones of two other cities. You couldn't dig up anything without finding remnants of a people we'd never known. The microbial population didn't show signs of serious decay until the moment before the sea went anaerobic. The things crawling out of there, they seemed to mutate all at once. The houses pulled support, said they'd prep us for an early move, but they left minimal forces in the barracks. We dug up old caches of materiel and used them. On the mutants from the sea, on the animals as they changed, on one another, on the houses when they saw what we'd got our hands on and came back to take control. Blood of Eden was there too, you know. And in the end,
The house is won, and most of us surrendered and we were moved. 2 moves later, and I'm here. There's still a facility on Lemuria, of course. 1 decade later, the house has made it safe for geopolymer refining. It must be desolate. Camilla said. What kind of mining?
Microsilicates, zeolites, industrial sands.
Camilla pushed her glasses up the bridge of her nose and said softly, That must have been hideous. I was a zoo director. I did the big non-clumpers. We were trying to work out if we could save them, said the angel. We had to cull all the animals when the houses pulled out. That was horrible, Honesty said gruffly.
That's not right.
No, but what can you do? Sometimes you step in to make sure someone won't suffer, said the angel.
No, I mean, the animal stuff's evil, but I thought you were a real doctor, said Honesty.
I'm an animal doctor, Honesty. I've been learning a lot about human medicine down at the clinic. Honesty absorbed this.
Do you know where I can get animal tranks? They go for a lot.
Bugger off, Honesty, said the angel tolerantly, not much like a teacher at all. Beautiful Ruby, who had been far more deeply affected by that story, drummed his hands urgently on his desk.
I can't let Sweetie do this. I don't want to get moved again. We used to live in a house, and now we live in a tip. What's next? I've got to stop her.
Then the angel said, But your mum isn't a necromancer, beautiful Ruby. The people saying, let's not fight, let's get a resettlement. They're not your enemies. If you think in black and white, your brain can't be agile. Beautiful Ruby still didn't look convinced.
But she's embarrassing me. She's letting us down. And she's probably going to get her lights punched out if she says that on the street.
Nobody ever died of being embarrassed, said the angel. Try to understand her point of view. And wait until she does something. And trust her to keep herself safe, too. Nona lifted her hand. The angel said, Nona, you work here, you can just talk. And Nona said, Are we going to have normal school?
You mean this morning?
Yes, as much as possible, as long as I can, said the angel. Hindered by the fact that I can't teach mathematics, I couldn't begin to teach you reading and writing, I don't want to teach history, but I do want to keep you louts out of trouble. So I thought I'd come and teach you that, how to stay out of trouble. The angel took a big roll of wax paper out of her satchel. She sat them all down at a table, even Kevin, who had to sit on top of the table, and spread it out in front of them. Camilla did not amble over, which surprised Nona. She was sitting with her hands clasped together, staring at the angel as hard as possible. Nona looked at the roll of wax paper instead, and didn't quite understand what she was seeing, until the angel said kindly, So this is a top-down diagram of the city. See, here's the Civic Centre, where some of you have recently been. Here she looked at Nona and Hot Sauce particularly, and Nona coloured. And here's us. She ran her finger down a few streets, made a few zigzags, and tapped another piece of the drawing. Nona still couldn't see how such a tiny move could represent her and Hot Sauce's expedition, nor could she pass the shapes, the heights of things. The map was too flat. Everything was a minute collection of squares and lines and squiggles, but beautiful Ruby seemed to get it. He pointed at a bit of the paper.
That's not there anymore.
The water plant? No, said the angel. They blew that up early in a bid to smoke the cohort, that's the 9 Houses army, out of the barracks. Really stupid stuff. And this isn't here, the big terraced graveyard. I mean, it's still there, shelled to hell and back, which wasn't as stupid. Although there's been so many sand burials outside the walls, it was all optimism in the end. Ruby, colour that in red. Beautiful Ruby took the red chisel-ended marker pen, not like a wax crayon or a fat ballpoint, a grown-up thing they all looked at admiringly, and neatly coloured that part in. The angel said, "Anywhere we colour red, that's somewhere you don't go unless the only other option is being swallowed up in a sinkhole. Got it?" Honesty said,
"I've been to that graveyard. It's all tents and concrete."
"Yes, but it's the first place people will assume necromancers will go, and people like to shoot first and ask questions later," said the angel. "Or, worst case, maybe a necromancer will be there. I know we think they'd have the blue madness, but what we know is that we don't know anything, okay? I want you lot to make that your motto. What we know is that we don't know anything." Nona quite liked this motto. It was an accurate summary of her entire life. The angel gave another pen to Honesty and said, "Can you find Southgate? Colour it in."
"Yeah, sure," said Honesty. "For you."
As though he might not have done it otherwise. When he found Southgate, he blocked it in. This pen was coloured blue. The angel said, "Southgate is a good place to go in an emergency. Why do you think that is?" Nona said mechanically, "Because it's got access to the road out of town, and there's a water pump, and the ground is stable, and it's not a priority target for any kind of orbital strike or bombardment." Everyone looked at her. Then they looked at Camilla, sitting in the back. Camilla didn't move. She had found some bit of paper and was writing on it furiously, so Nona didn't even get a "well done, Nona," which she deserved, because Cam had taught her all that.
"What's bombardment?"
asked beautiful Ruby suspiciously.
"No idea," said Nona proudly.
"An interesting group, your family," said the angel slowly, with an eye on Camilla. "I mean, you're totally right. If you have to run away, run there and keep close to the road. You're all city kids. I don't think any of you can survive in the open desert. Still, lots of buildings out there. Customs buildings, sturdy shells to hole up in from the elements. Go there, go together, but don't wait for one another. It's good to move in numbers, but don't stay anywhere dangerous to find the others. Don't worry about weapons or even food. Water bottles are your priority. Anything that happens will happen in the short term, okay?" Nona looked at Hot Sauce as the rest of them chorused a slightly reluctant, "Okay," and noticed that there was no surprise in her face. No sense she was taking in new information. Just the normal Hot Sauce dark-eyed intensity. She thought, the angel has already told her all this, and had her suspicion confirmed when the angel said, "Hot Sauce, tell them which building you picked out." Hot Sauce automatically placed her thumb outside of the city gates, on a lone square.
"I've hid out here before. It's an old watchtower. Keep along the road, white building with the top railing. Nobody else likes it. One of its legs looks sunk into the sand, but it's stable. There's stuff there."
"Good going, boss," said Honesty.
"If you try to sell anything I've left there," said Hot Sauce evenly, "I'll have you."
"I wouldn't sell your stuff," said Honesty, injured.
When Hot Sauce waited, he said,
I promise, I'm your best boy, Hot Sauce."
"Well, selling supplies you don't need isn't a bad idea in a pinch. Trading, I mean," said the angel briskly. "But like I said, this ought to be short term, and you might not even use a hideout. But if shooting breaks out in the city, serious shooting, you don't want to be anywhere near it." Beautiful Ruby said,
"But the necromancers can't do anything any more."
"So we think," said the angel. "But now there's a lictor." Nona shuddered at the word, on hearing it outside for real. The angel noticed and said more gently, "Don't be too alarmed. Really, even a lictor shouldn't be able to do much due to the blue madness. I'd love to know how one made it all the way down here without frothing. I'm not even sure they can survive on the surface the way things are. But that said, if the necromancers don't have necromantic abilities to fall back on, They may simply shell the place if things get too bad. That's what I'm talking about. No one wants to be in a city that's getting shelled. Lots of people are about to start streaming out, and it's in the house's best interest that the population stays in one place and stays put. So you need to find a middle ground, all right? There was a "st" from overhead. The lights abruptly went out. Everyone looked up, waiting, and then they came on again, but much more softly. Then there was a deep "chug-a-lug" noise that sounded as though it were coming from down the hall. "Wondered when that would happen," said the angel. "I guess that's how our wheels spoked." Camilla said,
"A generator?"
"Yes. It'll only last an hour or two, though. It's crap. I don't like keeping the kids here if the electronic locks don't work. I think that's it for school for now," she said. "I'm going to tack up this map here and here. And honesty, hot sauce, I think you should both try to memorize it. Blue area, red area, safe square. Test each other. The rest of you, let's go clean out the fridge. Take whatever's in it home to your families. Shake a leg, people."
That was said in the exact same tones in which the angel would have told them to go and get out the stuff for the hour of science.
So everyone moved without thinking about it. And even though beautiful Ruby and Honesty lifted up their voices to complain that they wanted more school. Honesty, wanting more school. They didn't need prompting to raid the fridge. Hot sauce, unusually mild and active, helped tack the map up on the board and stack the chairs. Nona thought this would be the moment Camilla would take her home. But it wasn't. Camilla was at the back of the classroom, lost in her own world, hunched in on herself and her paper, as though nobody else were there. So Nona busied herself finding all of the drawings they'd made yesterday and marking on the back who'd done them. Not a hard puzzle. Kevin still didn't know how to draw and didn't want to learn. Born in the Morning was quite good, but only ever drew cats. He said this was because they were his favourite, but they all knew that he was only good at drawing cats. Hot Sauce was the one with the palest, most hesitant drawing of Noodle, as though she had really drawn Noodle's ghost. Honesty always drew himself in all his pictures, so Ruby's was whatever was left over, and obviously Nona knew her own drawing. She smoothed them out and shook them over the sink so that all the crayon crumbs disappeared, and then she used that as an excuse to approach the angel, holding them before her.
The angel took the proffered sheaf.
"Might be nice to have these to take home, I suppose," said the angel. "A reminder of normal times." "Are we never coming back?" said Nona. The angel winced and touched an urgent finger to her own lips in a shush. But the others were too busy quarrelling over the yellow yeast berries and whether or not they should set out some for Born in the Morning.
"We shouldn't," beautiful Ruby was saying, but then Hot Sauce said, "We are," and that ended it,
to care about what Nona said to the angel. The angel leafed through the drawings and said softly, "With that one little broadcast, everything's changed, Nona."
"Yes, I know," said Nona sadly.
"We've got responsibilities."
"I thought you were your own boss here," said Nona.
"I have a lot of bosses," said the angel.
"How many?"
"Millions," said the angel, with perfect truth in the set of her shoulders. "Don't worry about that for now. I'm being unhelpful and unkind. It's just that, Nona, there comes a time in your life when you have to separate the things you do because they make you feel good from the things that make you..." The angel stopped so dead mid-sentence that Nona thought she had had a heart attack, that she had been hurt in a way Nona couldn't understand. She was staring at the topmost drawing of the sheaf of papers. Nona peeked over, ready to apologise for another one of Honesty's explicit anatomical sketches.
"Oh, that one's mine," she said,
wanting to break the spell, wanting to help.
"It's mine, don't worry."
The angel was speechless for a moment. Then she looked at the paper, then looked at Nona again, and looked at the paper. She said,
"Sure,
as though everything were normal and she hadn't acted like she had been knifed. She laid the drawing aside and said, "Give the rest out, why don't you?" and smiled at Nona. But it was a weirdly awful smile, as though the angel had forgotten how smiles worked. Nona was a little stupefied, but after all it was strange times and everyone was stressed, so she went around handing back the drawings to their owners. Beautiful Ruby said,
"I'll take boarded the boardings. I don't want mine. Who cares?"
And Nona did not argue. When they were all packed up, Nona's friends gathered together in the cloakroom, out of earshot of the others, Hot Sauce having shepherded them all there. The angel followed them out and said, "Good luck, take care," to each of them, and shook everyone's hand except Nona's and Hot Sauce's. She even specially shook Kevin's. They all got tongue-tied and didn't know what to say except Honesty, who said,
"Thanks, sir."
Then they all took the time to pat Noodle, who was sitting on his haunches next to the angel, and even held out his paw when Beautiful Ruby said,
"Shake,"
which pleased everyone. Then the angel went back inside with Noodle, and they all put on their sand sleeves and their UV jackets. Only Nona and Hot Sauce didn't button up theirs, and everyone's hats and masks were hanging down over their necks or their chins. Their mood was somber, and they clustered quite close to each other. Honesty said,
"You got a copy of that map, boss?"
"Yes. You remember it?"
"Yeah. You really got stuff out there. Like gun stuff."
"Not saying. You don't need the money. Who's taking Kevin home?"
Beautiful Ruby said,
"Aren't you doing it?"
And Hot Sauce said,
"Can't."
"I'll do it," said Honesty handsomely. "All hands to the pump."
Hot Sauce gave him the expression that everyone knew was Hot Sauce's smile, and which each of them would have cheerfully punched any of the others to get, even Nona. She and Honesty reached out to clasp each other's hands around the wrists. It was Nona who said feebly,
"What now? How do we stay together?"
"We'll be together when we need each other," said Hot Sauce. "We have a place to go. There's stuff there. Bring your families. I'll look after you. I know how."
Beautiful Ruby said,
"Even my mum, boss?"
"Even your mum," said Hot Sauce,
and Beautiful Ruby looked relieved. Honesty said,
"Let's spit on it."
But they were wearing gloves, and none of them wanted to take them off to spit on it. So Hot Sauce put her hand out in the centre, and Nona put her hand on Hot Sauce's, and Honesty put his hand on Nona's, and Beautiful Ruby put his hand on Honesty's, and Kevin had to put his hand underneath, not being tall enough to reach the top.
"Doesn't feel right without Born in the Morning," muttered Honesty.
"It's for him too," said Hot Sauce. Then she said, "We swear to protect each other and die for each other. We are loyal to each other forever. Any zombies we kill for each other, and we'll say, 'This is for the others.' That's it."
"I swear," said Honesty.
"I swear," said Nona.
"I swear,"
said Beautiful Ruby.
"Kevin,"
said Kevin, whose eyes had gone big and round under the stress of pledging, so they had to coach him until he said,
"I swear."
"I swear as boss," said Hot Sauce.
They let one another go. Then she said,
"Okay, go home."
They hauled their packs up on their shoulders and on their backs, and Nona and Hot Sauce walked them downstairs. There they got a massive surprise. Honesty said,
"Born!"
and buzzed the door. The door opened, and there was Born in the Morning, sulky with embarrassment, having been squatting down in front of the doorway and dusting himself off. They crowded around him, asking questions.
"Why weren't you in school? How'd you come now?
Why didn't you hit the ringer?"
"Didn't work," said Born in the Morning, going quite red. "Anyway, I didn't really come. I just came to see you. I slipped out."
Hot Sauce said,
"Your dad's joined up?"
"Yeah."
"That's fine," said Hot Sauce.
So they had to pledge all over again, with Beautiful Ruby loading Born in the Morning up with packages, and Born in the Morning not even getting on his high horse and simply being pleased. When they pledged, Beautiful Ruby, being silly, said,
"Kevin,
instead of I swear, so that they all fell around laughing. They all said Kevin, until Kevin said, injured,
"Don't make fun of Kevin,"
so they all fell around laughing again. That meant they were all happy when they saw Honesty and the others off, not scared or worried. Beautiful Ruby went off with Bourne in the morning specially, one of his arms slung familiarly around Bourne's neck, both of them talking quietly. The door wouldn't lock properly, so Nona and Hot Sauce put a chair in front of it, and Nona slipped her hand into Hot Sauce's as they went back up the stairs in an uplifted frame of mind.
"I'm glad Bourne in the morning showed up."
"We might not see him for a while," said Hot Sauce. "Edenites go through people like water."
This spoiled all of Nona's joy.
"You don't think he'll die, Hot Sauce?"
"No. I mean, we have to wait for his dad to die," said Hot Sauce, philosophically. "He'll only come to us when most of his fathers are dead. Then we can have him. His dad's a baggage."
18. When they got back up to the classroom, Camilla had emerged from her corner and made herself useful, unplugging all the electrical equipment and stacking chairs. The angel was writing something on the board. "I'm doing inventory," she said, to Nona's question. "If we get looted, I don't want them ruining all the kids' things trying to find stuff. Hot Sauce, can you go down the hallway and turn off the generator? I know you know how, but don't forget to bleed it afterward." Nona went to go with Hot Sauce, as she had a lively interest in what bleeding the generator would involve. But the angel said, "Nona, stay a moment." She had a piece of paper in her hand. When Hot Sauce had closed the door through to the classroom, Nona and Camilla both approached her. Camilla did something a little strange then. She tripped. She pitched forward on a raised bit of the carpet and stumbled into the angel, tried to right herself with her hands on the angel's hips and front, and stumbled upward, saying, "Sorry, sorry," glancing out the window like she was embarrassed. Then she turned her head back and looked more normally, Camilla, standing as gracefully as though she could never even think about tripping. The angel said, "It's really been that kind of day, hasn't it?" "Yes," said Camilla. The angel was fidgeting with the piece of paper. She said, "May I ask Nona a question?" "She doesn't have to answer," said Camilla. "Of course not," said the angel. Nona, who thought she could speak for herself, said,
"I'll try, but if you want to test me about the map, I don't think I'll be much good. I want to take it home and look at it there."
The angel showed her the piece of paper. It was her drawing again. Maybe the angel really liked it. Nona was ready to be magnanimous if the angel wanted to keep it. She guessed she could draw it again at home if she wanted, and she hadn't even really tried very hard. The angel said, "How did you draw this?" This question bewildered Nona so much that at first she didn't know what to say. The angel slid a sheet of paper in front of her. She recognised the scribbles she was doing, with most of her mind elsewhere, right before she and Hot Sauce had escaped to go to the broadcast, and she said, puzzled to death,
"With my hand?"
The angel urged tersely, "Did you get this from a picture?" Nona looked down at the animal she had drawn and thought perhaps she understood. She said,
"No, I made it up. It does work, I promise. See these things? They're its ears," she said, in much the same tones as she would have explained to Kevin. "This thing is its nose, and you can't see it because I didn't draw it, but the mouth is under here. When first it was born, it